This is KBOO Portland. We are creeping up on 11 o'clock, at which time Pacific Underground will tell us about the Japanese-American summer celebration of Oban. And you can hear it all. KBOO.fm. You can check out iTunes and Google Play as well. And all these KBOO programs rely on the support of the audience. KBOO can only do what it does because it relies on its audience, and so is accountable to the audience, to the membership of the KBOO Foundation. You can be a part of that. Go to kboo.fm or use the mobile app, and then you click on donate. Coming up, some important news about what's going on in your community, and we'll jump right into Pacific Underground on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Give me an F! Give me a U! Give me a C!
Tune in August 16th from noon till 4 p.m. for KBOO's celebration of Woodstock 50 years later, featuring previously unreleased music and more from the original festival tapes, plus recent interviews with the voices of participants and musicians who attended the festival, including Country Joe of Country Joe and the Fish and Jorma Kaukonen of the original Jefferson Airplane. That's August 16th starting at noon for KBOO's celebration of Woodstock 50 years later. Tune in.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Unity, a night of feminist Latinx BDX hip-hop, Tuesday, August 28th at 9 p.m. at the Dog for Lunch in Portland. Unity features artists Maria Advertencia Lirica from Oaxaca, Valentina Peralta from Chile, Portland's Kayla J, and DJ La Pausi. Nunca fuimos de viaje a Japón. This event is also sponsored by Colectivo Ruda and Hub Hub Creative. Again, la mula no era arisca, pero la hicieron. That's Unity, a night of feminist Latinx PDX hip-hop, Tuesday, August 28th at 9 p.m. at the Dog Fair Lounge, 830 E. Burnside Street in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under community events.
Welcome to another episode of Pacific Underground, the show where we talk about issues relevant to the Asian American and Pacific Islander experience. I am Tabitha Teo, your host, and I am joined by
Sarah Onitska
and Jenny Yokoyama.
Welcome.
Hi, Tabitha. How you doing?
I'm good.
Thanks for inviting us today.
Well, I guess this is my way of thanking you for inviting me to Oban a few weeks ago. So you go to the Portland Buddhist Temple.
Oregon Buddhist.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are about this whole state.
Not just Portland. It's statewide. And I know this is something that you've always been really involved in. Like, in the whole time that I've known you, like, I know every summer you were always really busy with Oban. And I know from taking Japanese class that Oban is this big festival in Japan. But I never really knew much about it. I know, I've asked you before what it is about. And this year, well, I know you sent, like, a Facebook invite, but a Facebook invite is not the same as, like, a personal invite. And
I volunteered you. That's how I invited you. I was like, hey, would you like to come to the Oban Fest and work at it? Thanks.
And I was planning on going anyways, so I was like, sure.
Thanks for volunteering, by the way.
Oh, it was fun. Though I feel lied to because I was told I'd be indoors and it was like a 90-degree day. I was like, well, yeah.
And she had to be outdoors, but welcome to Aubonne. That's what Aubonne is. It's being outside and being extremely hot because it's like, why is this always in the first week of August? And yeah, why is it specifically 95 degrees today?
Yeah. And I also felt really honored that you not only like roped me in, but you also lent me a yukata to wear as well.
Yeah, you looked good.
Thank you. I've only worn yukata a few times in my life, and yes. Though the first time I was also dressed by Japanese high school girls. Oh, God, that sounds so weeby.
The truth.
The truth comes out. And we will talk about weeds. But it was really fun. And I participated on the dances, had some delicious food. And Sarah, you were also there.
Yeah, I was there. I volunteered as well. I was working a cashier shift.
Cool.
And it was really great. I actually hadn't been to Aubonne for a couple of years, I think, at that point. I used to go when I was younger, like when I was really young, because I grew up here and I was in the Japanese magnet program, and so there were typically a lot of families who went each year. I remember when I was younger, they used to have those like water balloon things. They're like a little, do you know what I'm talking about?
The water balloon yo-yo thing?
Yeah, the water balloon yo-yo.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds dangerous.
I used to love that when I was a kid. They would have fun patterns and stuff on them too. And then the dances, of course, and this year was actually really fun because I feel like I've been starting to get to know the Japanese American community more here as an adult, and so there were just a bunch of folks there who I could connect with and dance with, and it was really fun. Yeah.
So I guess for folks that don't know what Aubonne is, would y'all mind explaining what Aubonne is?
Take it away, Jenna.
I don't know if my explanation is like very technically correct. We'll see. If you are a Buddhist minister, feel free to call in and totally correct me here. So Aubonne is a holiday that's celebrated in Japan. It's a Buddhist holiday. Actually, it kind of depends who you talk to. Some people have different feelings, but it's basically a Buddhist holiday that is often described as like Japanese Day of the Dead because it's a time of the year where it's not actually one specific day, like in Japan. It's celebrated throughout the summer, mainly in August. And it's about ancestor memorialization. And so you're supposed to go and dance. And it's basically just ancestor worship. In Japan, they don't celebrate it the same way we do here in the United States. They do dancing there as well, but the dancing is more done by like performance groups now. While here in the United States, it's communal dancing and just anybody is invited to dance. But one thing that I think happens both in the United States and in Japan still is that it's the time of year that you go back to where like your ancestors are buried and you like clean off their tombstones and you leave incense and all that sort of stuff. And so basically I like to think of it as the furusato holiday, that hometown feeling when everybody like comes home and you gather with family and stuff like that. So here in America though, the way we celebrate Aubonne is kind of interesting because we don't do it the same way they do it in Japan, but we do it the way they kind of did it in Japan like a century ago, because that's where these traditions come from, are the people who came over in like the 1890s. And so like communal dancing, if you talk to people in Japan, they think we're really weird that we still do communal dancing. But when they come here, they think it's the most exciting thing because that was something like literally their ancestors did, but they don't do anymore. But like we still do here. Sometimes I feel, okay, this is a total side, but I had thought about it the other day, that sometimes it feels like Star Trek. That's right, Star Trek fans, me for this comment because it's about Star Trek.
I love any Star Trek.
So you know how sometimes on Star Trek, they'll go visit a planet of like humans that somehow created a colony on that planet, but like 100 years ago. And so like their values look backwards compared to like the technology of the future and all that stuff. Yeah. And they're like living like Puritans and stuff. That's what kind of like the Japanese American community traditions in the United States feels like to me. It's like they're not modern Japan. Mm-hmm. their old Japan. But even if we go back to Portland 100 years ago, it wouldn't be the same. It'd be more closer to how they were doing in Japan. And then it's evolved over the last century here in the United States. So if you show up to a Obon festival, what you're going to see, it's always a fundraiser. That's basically how they are. They're fundraisers for Buddhist temples here in the United States. And you'll go, there's going to be food booths. There's always food booths, which, oh my God, it's some of my favorite food of the year.
The musubi was so good.
There's always spam musubi, and there's usually like yakitori, and there's like corn, and there's dango. There's, oh, so good. And then at the end of the evening, then there'll be dancing, and there's usually like 12 to 16 communal dances, and everybody just dances in this gigantic circle, and we think of it like as Japanese line dancing, because it's not difficult. They're just like you, just like line dancing, where you do like a repeated pattern of a dance over and over and over again. So probably by the end of the song, you can do the dance. So we just invite everybody to come out, dance in the circle, and then so there's songs that we still dance to that were, you know, written like in 1920, but then we also have songs that were written just like last year. So that's Obon.
Cool. Do you think in 100 years, Japanese Americans will have professional Obon performance groups like they did in Japan 100 years ago?
I don't.
Or currently?
I don't think so. Because we don't really have a tradition here of Japanese dance in general. Mm-hmm. And when we do have a Japanese dance tradition here, it's the very formal high art of Japanese dance. And I think that communal dancing thing has now just become very much like its own thing, because it's one of the only ways that Japanese Americans get together and like hang out in a festival like way. So I think it's a really important part to our identity in the United States to do something together. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hoping that in a century the dancing is still done as a group, because watching professionals is boring. Doing the dancing yourself is awesome.
Yeah.
it was super awesome. Me and my friends who went, we started out the dances just wearing, because none of us really had any of the like traditional Japanese clothing or anything. So we started out just wearing our like, you know, Western clothes, went downstairs where all of the clothes were being sold, and then came back up and like looked significantly more Japanese, and then like rejoined the dancing circle. So it was really funny. To kind of have that transformation.
Yeah, I was wondering where you guys just all of a sudden pulled outfits from. I was like, I swear they weren't wearing that.
We were not. We went, we bought outfits, we came back up, and we were like, yep, here we go.
I love that about Obon, that it's kind of like this self-contained thing, too. It's like, you don't have something to wear? Go downstairs. Yep. There's a kimono sale. Uh-huh. You didn't bring food? Guess what? We got food for you, too. You don't know the dances? It's okay. Because there's always teachers in the middle of the day of this big circle, and so you just watch them. Yeah, because also, yeah, that's the thing about the dances. It's not about knowing the dance. You know, the idea isn't to actually do it well. It's just to be in the community, make up your own dance. I see people doing all sorts of like weird things because they don't know the dance. I'm like, I'm just gonna do the Macarena.
I feel
like
I can attest to you do not have to dance well.
I thought you did great, Tabitha.
Oh, thank you. You were in front of me the whole time. How could you know?
Because whenever I turned around, it looked like you knew what you were doing. Oh, okay. So I'm going to go with, that is good enough.
Okay.
Yeah, I spent a little bit of time craning my neck and trying to see the people in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So your head is crammed the other
way. Yeah, that's how I dance. Like, I dance looking to the left, because that's usually where the middle circle is, to the left. So that's kind of like how I know most dances. It's like, well, you look to the left, and then you do this with your arms.
Yeah. And you were going to the dance rehearsals, too, from time to time.
I know, and you would think I would know the dances way better. And still I forget. Yeah, whatever. But I think it's also fun not to know. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there's years where I've just totally not gone to the practices, because they do Obon dance practices for like 2 or 3 weeks before Obon, just so that people can learn if they want to know. But some years I'm just like, oh no, we are going to be bold and not go to rehearsal. And so on the day of, we're going to do our own thing and be free. And then I end up just running into people and craning my neck to the left.
So Sarah, what has been your experience with Obon growing up? Did your parents celebrate it?
Yeah, my parents, I used to go with my brother and my parents when I was younger. I don't have that many really memories of it, besides especially the yo-yo, the water yo-yo thing, water balloon yo-yo.
Okay, because there's always kids games. At Obon.
That's what we always used to do, is go to the kids section, and it was just this thing that we looked forward to every single year on like such a hot day every single year.
Did you dance as a kid?
I probably. I feel like probably, yeah. It's just it was a different experience, I feel like, this year when I went as an adult, but I feel like it was still just as fun, or maybe even more so now that I actually am more aware of what's going on. I think I was always scared to go in these last couple of years because I have this sort of anxiety around seeing like parents and of people that I like knew from high school or middle school or something, you know, just like those distantly connected people. I was like, oh no, am I going to see these people? Am I going to have to interact? What am I going to say? Am I going to have to talk in Japanese? You know, like been this thing that I feel like I've kind of avoided for a number of years. But I'm so glad that I got contacted to volunteer and that I went and just, I stayed until the very end. I had a shift from 5 to 7 but we were there until like 9:30 or so. Until it was dark and everything was closing up, and there was like a mini dance party at the end.
Yeah. We always have to have the thriller.
Yeah, for some reason. I was wondering about that.
That's the tradition at Oregon Buddhist Temple, apparently. It's like, oh, the traditional dancing is done, and now thriller.
And now Michael Jackson's the thriller.
I don't know why. But to me, that signals the end of Portland's Obon. And there's Michael Jackson. It's been another successful Obon year.
I was too tired from all the other dancing to do Thriller. The one year I did learn the Thriller dance. That's off topic. What was your experience with Obon growing up?
So I did not grow up here in Portland. I grew up in Southern California, where the Obon culture is big. It's a thing down there for Japanese Americans, for the Nikkei community, because there's so many temples, you know, and it's like the biggest Japanese American community outside of Hawaii. So the Obon season starts in July, and there is an Obon festival at like every single weekend. Sometimes there's two in one weekend. And so it's like a thing where people go to like 5 or 6 Obon festivals in one summer, and your whole summer, you know, weekends are just taken up by going to these places with members of your temple. And so I had a very like rich experience in that way, where each of the temples even kind of does their dances a little bit differently. Like for example, one of the very famous songs is called Tankobushi. It's the coal miner dance, and they do it at every single temple, at least that I've been to. And but people often do just little things differently. Like, oh, these people put their arm up, but these here at this temple, they put their arm down. And so you got to see all these people doing their dances differently. And when they go to each other's temples, they do it differently. And it's like everybody's kind of showing off their style. And because you have this really rich culture there, people are super into it in the way they dance. When I came up to Portland and I went to Obon for the first time, I felt like a weirdo, because it felt like people danced, in my view, it felt very conservative. And people don't like, there's this stuff called kakegoe during songs where it's like a call and response where you like shout things. No one did the kakegoe up here. And so I remember like my first Obon, I was like, asore! Oh, I'm just shouting and I look like I'm really loud. Oh my God, Portland's so passive.
I feel like that's just reflective of Portland culture in general.
We are
a very weirdly reserved, but unreserved in other ways kind of city. I don't know. We're weird like that.
So then in growing up, though, like I had the same experience as Sarah, where like my idea of Obon was the kid booths with a sprinkling of dancing, because that was super exciting. For me, we had goldfish booths where you would like throw a ping pong ball at the like little...
I feel like they used to have those.
And then I feel like somewhere in the Japanese American community, people start to realize that we were all just abusing fish and that we should stop doing that, because I don't see it anymore. Yeah. But that was my jam. Yeah. And then I definitely did the dances growing up. It was like a big deal for me, because I didn't I didn't go to like a Japanese magnet school like Sarah. So for me, going to Obon was like the one time a year that I got to be with the whole Japanese community that wasn't like my family. And for me, it was like a big deal because I got to see people from different generations like doing this dance. And so that was a lot of fun. Yeah. So it was something I definitely looked forward to every summer. But something you were just saying about Portland real quick, that I thought was really interesting. So the Kakegoa thing, right? I was asking someone, she's a sansei, she's a third generation Japanese American, and she grew up in Portland. I was like, what is this with the kakegoe? Like, it's in all the songs. They have it in the songs, and they even have crowds of people doing it so you can do along with them. Why does anyone in Portland do it? And she said, oh, we used to do it. She's like, when the Issei, that first generation of Japanese Americans, right, the ones who ever came in the like 1800s, she's like, when they were alive, they all did it. So we would do it with them. I remember that when I was a child. She's like, but after, you know, World War II and everything, and people stopped speaking Japanese and the Issei generation died off, no one did the kakegoe anymore because no one spoke Japanese. Dang. And so it's just gotten really quiet. But this summer, we had a live Obon band. And I was in the band, and we got the crowd, the dancers, to do the kakegoe. And I got a bunch of feedback that people said the live part was the most fun. It was the most fun. I don't know why it was the most fun. And I'm convinced that it's because you are engaged in more than just dancing. You're also doing the speaking, chanting part, which that's a very, like, community-building thing when you say things together. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that was really interesting. I'm like, oh, is this just like a Portland thing? But it's actually about loss of culture, where we didn't carry that on because of the loss of language. So in that way, it's very Portland too, where it's like, shall we erase the Japanese people? Why, yes.
Yeah, sure.
But then the Yonsei are trying to bring it back. Sarah, I'm hoping that you'll be in like my kakegoe band next year.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Yes, for it's sure. on the radio. It's so official.
I would love to. And I'm sure we could get other folks to also participate in that. Yeah.
Because it's like a chance to like, I mean, I don't speak Japanese. And so for me, the kakegoe growing up was like really exciting because I knew that everyone around me also didn't speak Japanese. You know, we were just a bunch of Japanese Americans just pretending we spoke Japanese, but we were all doing it together. So that self-consciousness of I don't speak Japanese would fade away. Mm-hmm. And it was like, ah, let's all poorly say these Japanese words together. I loved it. I loved it.
I have to admit, I feel a little weird being the host talking about a Japanese festival because, as I'm sure many listeners have heard me say again and again, I am Chinese American and I'm sitting between you two talking about this Japanese festival. This did bring a really interesting question to my mind. Like, we talk about cultural appropriation all the time on the show, as we should. This did bring up the topic of cultural appreciation and participation from, like, as an outsider. And is there a right way to do it? I hope I wasn't being appropriative. I was wearing a yukata. And from my former weeb years, I had my own pair of zori. And Tabi. I'm sorry. I didn't feel like I was being appropriative. And I felt like I was participating in a meaningful way in this festival. Because I know it was about honoring your ancestors. So, like, I was thinking about my grandparents and my great grandparents. And I was a little paranoid the whole time that like, man, am I being cringy right now? I hope I'm not being cringy right now.
Sarah, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it is different when another Asian or Asian American person does it too. It's definitely not the same power dynamic as white people. And also, I mean, the fact that you were invited by a Japanese person, you know, by Jenna to like wear the yukata, I think is totally different. If you're if you're invited into a space where most people are wearing those things and it is respectful to wear those things and like within, you know, the festival or the tradition to wear those things, and it totally, I think, yeah, go for it. I think my issue when people are wearing Where I have an issue with people wearing kimonos and yukatas and stuff is, like, outside of those specific times. Like people who are not Japanese or Japanese-American, if you're wearing them just for style and without any meaning behind it, that's when it's an issue to me. So, you know how a lot of the famous clothing companies like Nordstrom and others are like making special kimono styles and stuff now. Like, that's a little bit like that's
and Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, oh my god, we don't even need to go there.
Absolutely. Japan took her down. That was
yeah
great.
No, she Japan just got just like, destroyed. Nope. She got completely destroyed.
Cancelled.
But yeah, like it's a very different thing to me when people are showing up with like the appropriate wear for that time and place and literally invited by the people of that culture versus willy-nilly, not caring what it means, not caring what it's for, just putting it on because it's pretty, right?
Okay. Because we alluded to this earlier about complaining about this earlier. I feel like at any Japanese cultural festival, at any Japanese thing in general, it is inevitable that there will be a few white people in kimono, and also people cosplaying as Japanese pop culture characters. And I felt maybe that is cultural appropriation. and it's, cultural participation, yeah, done wrongly.
It's like, it's harder for me when there's white people, I don't know. Well, how do you feel, Jenna, about, like, white people wearing kimonos at this specific event?
So, I have the same kind of feelings that you were saying about, like, it's kind of like how people are doing it. I'm not necessarily really bothered by non-Japanese people wearing kimono, but as long as they're doing it respectfully. Mm-hmm. So, like, especially when people are wearing, although don't wear a kimono to obon, wear a yukata, because yeah, if you're wearing a kimono, you're gonna get super hot and sweaty and gross. Yeah.
Gonna die of heat stroke.
So that, even that sort of thing, when I see somebody wearing a kimono, I'm like, oh, you're wearing that to maybe look pretty. I don't know if you're trying to fit in, or maybe you just don't understand like why you would wear a yukata versus a kimono at this kind of event. So that's where I kind of get bugged personally, when I see people who I'm like, oh, I bet you wear that kimono to everything that's Japanese, mm-hmm, as opposed to you're wanting to be here for your ancestors, you know, and like that's what you're wanting to participate in. Yeah, because I feel like a lot of it is very much like exhibition and people, mm-hmm, just wanting, mm-hmm, wanting to be like, look, you're in kimonos,
find,
I'm in kimonos,
yeah, to find
too,
an excuse to just put it on, yeah, and like, but look,
it's
cool.
And it's definitely like, you know, I want to give credit to people for wanting to appreciate Japanese culture and all that sort of stuff, but I'm like, you need to dig a little deeper about, yeah, what is appreciation and like, what are we doing here today? And then also look at the Japanese people and ask, why do they wear yukata? It's not just because it's obon and it's a Japanese thing. For me, it's kind of why I also do the dances. When I do the dances, I feel connected to my ancestors because I know that they did these dances too. And when I'm wearing a yukata, it's part of me connecting to that tradition that my ancestors did, that my, you know, my aunties and my grandmas, and they all wore yukata to obon. And so I'm remembering them through that. So when I see other people who are not Japanese, sometimes I wonder, like, what is your connection with the clothing? Why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. And that's something that people should think about, you know, that if it's just about, I'm wearing a kimono because you're wearing a kimono, no good. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, I'm wearing a yukata, and I, and like Tabitha, you were saying, like, you did think of your grandparents, you know, and you were dressed by Japanese people, there's like a room where like a whole bunch of Japanese ladies will just make you stand still and they just like put you, yeah, on this, yeah, thing, yeah, super, yeah, fast. It's amazing.
The lady that tied me so tightly, it's like,
that,
yay,
means it was on correctly. Yeah. You're like, can you breathe? No, perfect.
But I felt so secure.
Yeah, but so there's that sort of thing where I feel like people can even wear yukata and still feel like a connection to something older. But that's where I feel like you need to dig deep and understand, why do we wear the yukata? Why do we use the uchiwa? Why do we do all these things? And it's not just because they're Japanese. It's because we're trying to connect to something that came before us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, especially white people at that event don't necessarily need to show up in that. Like, there's plenty of people not wearing that. So, like, go ahead and just, you know, it'd be fine if you didn't. It's definitely, for me, kind of a different feeling, like, seeing non-Japanese people there wearing that clothing versus, like, just out in the streets.
Yeah.
For, you know, like, not a part of that event.
I will say, okay, cosplaying though,
oh,
that just bothers me.
No, okay, there's a clear difference.
Yeah, people would show up to Obon and be like, oh, this is different than an anime convention,
really not appropriate.
Oh, this is religious. Yeah, because I think people don't understand that Obon is religious, you know, and on that level, that it's not just like, here's the cherry blossom festival. It's like, no, this one's about real things. So I think that's kind of people do get aware, because most of the times when you see people cosplay at Obon, there's like one person and you don't see them come back the next year. Or when they do come back the next year, their outfit is very different.
They wear normal clothes.
Yeah. Because...
Or their grandfather's killed.
Yeah. And like, I'm down with that too. What I would love to see at Obon is people embracing the idea of Obon, which is about honoring your ancestors, and it doesn't have to be Japanese ancestors. I would love to see people show up in their lederhosen, and I don't know, that's the only European thing I know. kilts and stuff like that. Like, what did your ancestors wear? Wear that, you know, and like feel that connection. Participate in what we're doing too. Don't try to just like appropriate or feel like you can appreciate it. You can actually do Obon.
Because the thing is, white people typically have such weak connections to their ancestors, a lot of them hardly even know where they're from.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know if that means they need to wear like Civil War era clothing something.
No.
But just even like, I would love if people wore mementos from like their grandparents or friends that passed or whatever. You know, it's like, it doesn't have to necessarily always be about like dressing the part. It's about feeling the part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So people bring pictures, put it in your pocket. You know, if your best friend that passed away always did some, you know, Running Man move, then do it during the Obon dance. Like, honor your friends.
I was, speaking of the religious part, I was kind of curious if Obon was related to the Chinese Hungry Ghost Festival.
Yes, they're the same.
Okay.
Basically. It's the same legend.
Because doing research, at least research as far as Wikipedia goes.
I mean, that is truth. Everything that's in Wikipedia is true. Everything.
When everything is crowdsourced, it's all true.
It's all true.
But Wikipedia did have a connection on the Obon article to the Chinese Hungry Ghost Festival. And I was reading about that. And that is also a Buddhist festival in China, about this one monk. The story goes that this monk saw his mother burning in hell. He was like, oh no, mom, Buddha, what do I do? And Buddha said to him, well, your mom's in hell because you aren't taking care of her grave. And so the next year, the monk started sweeping and leaving an offering at his mother's grave, and she made her way into Buddhist nirvana, at least Buddhist Chinese nirvana. And
I wonder if she made it into Buddhist Japanese nirvana, right?
I know, right?
She's so busy in China.
I know, still stuck in China. That's
what do you guys do in China for the festival? Like, what is it?
Well, I was raised Christian, so I did not have that Buddhist cultural upbringing. But I'd always heard about it growing up, and like, when I first heard that it was called Hungry Ghost Fest, like, ooh, I bet it's like Chinese Halloween. And then I did my research, and I was like, it is not Chinese Halloween. And it's a somber day where you go to your ancestor's grave, you leave an offering, you sweep it, and sort of like tell, and you also like talk to the grave and talk to it like you're talking to your ancestor about how your life is doing, how the family's doing, how your kids are doing.
Have you ever done that?
I have not, but
do you have any desire to?
I kind of do. Like, At least on my grandfather's birthday, which is actually coming up, I was gonna planning on like me and my cousin going to my grandfather's grave. Like, I don't think we're gonna like leave an offering or there because he was Christian. But I think it'd be nice on my grandfather's birthday to go and like visit him and maybe say a few words to him. I'm kind of like wondering if my cousin and I should invite her grandmother. I don't know if that'd be too weird for her.
That'd probably be nice. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know your grandma. Maybe your grandma was just like, that's done. That's done.
Or, yeah, very Chinese stiff upper lip. It's like, we don't talk about grandpa. I mean, she still talks about him from time to time, but yeah. But I don't know if it'd be too raw for her or too emotional to like visit his grave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you could do that together as a family, it sounds like it'd be really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go, Sarah? Do you do the whole like Oaxaca thing?
Have I ever? My grandparents are all buried in California.
Okay.
And I do have some Japanese relatives still in Japan. And so I don't think I've visited them before. But I think even there have been times where we've like visited graves of family members or ancestors, like as a family, and I don't think it's not exactly the same process. And you know, graves in America like look a little bit different and are set up differently than the ones in Japan as well. But I think it's that same sentiment or meaning that it's important to go there and leave flowers and clean it off a little bit. And yeah, I mean, it is a really powerful experience as a family. And I really like how in Japan they really make that really important, like they do it, you know, they do it every single year. I think just to have that be so intentional is really important.
Yeah, I'm glad to have a holiday that forces me. Yeah. I'm that like it's really easy to put things off,
yeah,
you know, but
sure
having like this scheduled thing that if I don't do it, I just get eaten by Nikkei guilt to death.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have not gone home yet to my Oaxaca, the how do you say it in English, a cemetery.
Yeah.
I haven't been to the cemetery yet to go clean off my family's tombstones, which I do actually multiple times a year. But during the summer, during the Obon season, I'll do like the scrub brush and I like literally do things, pull weeds and stuff like that. And so I am being eaten with so much guilt
right
and
now.
The like hungry ghost story. It's like, oh my God.
Jenna, your ancestors are burning in hell.
I know, because none of my cousins do it anymore. Like it's just because we don't have any Buddhist people in my family left. So it's like me and my sister and the rest of our family is all Christian now. And so if we don't go home and do it, it just like doesn't get done.
Right.
And so there's all that guilt too that I haven't done it and I'm going home in September to do it.
Mm.
But oh my God, I've let it go for so long. Mm. So it's, but it feels good when I do it. And I totally talk to my relatives like they're alive.
Yeah.
Like my cousin Gary, I'm like, sup, how you doing? Just want to let you know that I'm doing this. And oh my gosh, I'm failing again. But you know, you remember from last year, now I'm dating this person. Like, I have a total life update with like dead cousins and grandparents and stuff. And like, I even like expect responses from them too. I'm like, just let me know what you think about that. You know, I'll look for signs. I don't know. I just sort of like, yeah, in my mind, it's very much just like a routine that you like talk to them and you treat them as though their spirit is there, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I would also like to apologize on behalf of China that if you're wondering why it's in summer, it's probably because of us and the Hungry Ghost Festival.
Well, you know, here's the other thing that's like kind of weird though about Obon is I also blame it on the Shinto because, right, like in Japan, 80% or something like that, people call themselves Shinto and 70% of themselves call themselves Buddhist, but nobody actually really goes to temple that much or whatever, except for when it comes to like holidays.
Yeah.
And so I've always kind of thought of, at least the history of Obon that I was taught growing up, was that Obon is kind of like Christmas where it was like this Buddhist holiday, or so Buddhism came into Japan where Shinto was already established. And they, in order to establish it, they just sort of like, hey, we got matchy holidays. Oh, your thing is just like our Hungry Ghosts. They all look at this, right? So I think of it as like a Chinese thing, but I think of it as like what most Japanese things are. It's like somebody else's culture, and then they turned it into their own thing, kind of like Christmas. And they're like, so who knows when like the original Shinto thing was or whatever. Mm-hmm. But so it's kind of like this very unique Japanese-y thing.
As y'all were talking about honoring your ancestors, like, I do kind of like how a lot of non-European cultures are very intentional in honoring their ancestors and their cultures, because I feel like a lot in the West, someone's dead and buried, after the funeral, you're not going to acknowledge them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in the West, it builds this, like, real death phobic culture and society.
Yeah.
And like everyone's trying to look younger, everyone's trying to live forever, and I personally am kind of looking forward to when I die because like I mean, I don't know if there's an afterlife, but I'm kind of excited to see how many people come to my funeral.
I don't know if you'll find that out, Tabitha.
This is true.
It's kind of thing how funerals work, but you know what,
this is true.
I'll go if I'm alive. I'll go visit you during Obon, and I'll give you the annual report and be like, Tabby, there was 100 chihuahuas at your funeral.
Yes.
I got a whole chihuahua circus to come.
Yay!
And now Tabitha's like, oh my God, when's my funeral? I want to go.
There was a chihuahua firing squad at your funeral.
Oh my God. Stop. Oh, I want to see this happen now. I'm very excited for your funeral.
Yeah, I'm excited. Now. Yeah. I'm excited.
But they're not shooting guns. They just yap.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm so looking forward to my funeral. Hundreds of chihuahuas.
Just barking and
yipping.
We'll just shoot them out of a cannon like they're out of a t-shirt cannon.
Yay!
Just have them flying over Portland.
But yeah, I like how there's a dedicated day to think about your ancestors, remember where you came from, in China and Japan, and that you're like thinking about death, and like that maybe that you will someday die, and so and also like to foster relationships in the present so that maybe they you can be honored when you die.
Yeah, that thing you were saying about death phobia in Western culture really struck me. I think there really is a taboo about talking about death, and it actually ends up being kind of unhealthy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like people want to not talk about it because they don't want to talk about, oh, death and morbid things. Oh, that's bad. That's, you know, that, but then in not talking about those things, they're actually creating more, right?
Yeah. We don't have enough like issues. Funeral rites and like, yeah, mm-hmm. we don't have a way that people can literally touch death without fear. Like when I think about like if you go to Japan during a funeral, for example, like everybody's cremated there,
mm-hmm.
and part of the ceremony, like here in the United States, you're just given a bunch of ashes. But when you're actually cremated, your bones don't actually turn to ash. They actually have to like...
They put your bones in a grinder.
Yeah, they basically put them in a grinder, whatever, right? So, but in Japan, they don't grind the bones. At least some sects of Buddhism, what you do is you're given these very long chopsticks and you pick out the bones from like the crematorium. And like you are... I remember my dad telling me for his parents... that they would pick out the Adam's apple because it looks like hands praying. That's the shape of the bone or whatever that makes up your Adam's apple.
Whoa.
And so it's considered this like thing that you take out when somebody dies, and the oldest son is supposed to like take these really long chopsticks and pick them out and of like the bones. And I remember thinking, wow, that's such a nice tradition where you're still connecting with the body when someone has died, and you are connecting with in a way that is very, very like much tapping into your mortality. Because I hate how in the United States we put so much
separate.
Yeah, and we put so many chemicals into people.
Yes.
And the way we preserve dead bodies, that when you know, this person dies, they disappear into a mortuary mm-hmm. or whatever, and then they come out and they look like they're sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like,
it's so weird.
I don't want to look like I'm sleeping. Yeah. I want to look dead. That's yeah. weird. And so I like that about like other cultures, and you know, at least about Japanese culture, that there is some semblance of like, you need to accept death, be mm-hmm. part of it, and help people transition mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. death, you know, and to like take care of their body and stuff. And I feel like Obon, kind of like Day of the Dead too, do that sort of thing where there isn't such finality when yeah. you die. Mm-hmm. There's an
yeah.
idea.
It's not the end. Yeah,
yeah mm-hmm. that you're extended out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one part that was really important to Obon that you mentioned, Jenna, was the music and dancing. Could you go into a little bit about the history and the importance of the music and dancing to Obon?
So I'm not super, super, super knowledgeable about like the history of all the songs and stuff. I know that a lot of the dancing that happens, like the first song that's always done is a song called Bonodori no Uta, and that comes from Japan, and it's an invitation to come dance. And it's just a song that's like, come, come dance in the circle.
Thank you.
And then, like, in Portland, it ends with another really old traditional one, which was that coal miner song that I talked about earlier. So we have songs like are from Japan. Like, there's definitely songs that are about, like, the fishermen in Kyushu and stuff like that. So you'll see lots of songs that the people, the first generation, brought over from their villages and their dances. But probably since, like, the late 80s, 90s, there's been a resurgence of writing our own obon music. We've actually had one of the composers on our show before, Nobuko Miyamoto. She's really well known in the Asian American movement, all that sort of stuff. And part of her Asian American movement, which she did, was that she created Japanese American dances, because typically we do Japanese dances. And so she was encouraged by her Buddhist temple that she was going to, like, in the 70s and the 80s, was like, hey, why don't you just write songs and dances? And she's like, I don't know how to do that. And they're like, figure it out. And as a result, for the last 30 years, she's brought out a lot of songs that are really awesome for the Japanese American community, because they're in English while still doing a lot of the traditional Japanese dances, but they talk about more modern things.
Was, like, it like the Mottainai song?
Yeah,
the
that Mottainai was stuck in my head for so many days. And now that y'all have reminded me, it's going to be stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
Yeah, because Mottainai means don't be wasteful. So right now it's very, very pertinent, you know. So it's all about, like, well, you know, your grandma used to, like, never waste a drop of water, so you don't do it either. And so, you know, the dance is funny because the dance, you're supposed to be imitating your grandma lecturing you in the dance. And so that's kind of like what all the dances are when you are dancing the dances. It's never just random movements. All the dances represent something. Like, when you put your hand up here, you're referencing the moon. And when you're doing this, you're pushing the cart. You're always reenacting the song in many, many ways. And so that's a really interesting, I think, part of it, is that you get to also learn aspects of Japanese life, or at least old Japanese life. And now we have modern songs that are like Pokemon.
Yeah, that was so funny. And Doraemon.
The Pokemon song and the Doraemon song. Yeah.
That was so fun.
Like, in Portland here at the Oregon Buddhist Temple, we wrote one that's called Portland Ondo. And we talk about the hipsters and the breweries. Or that's Mochitsuki Ondo, because we also have a Mochitsuki event that happens once a year. So we wrote a song for that. And so, like, if you go up to Seattle, they have a Seattle song. And LA has all these songs that are just about living in LA. And, you know, in Canada, I guess they were even writing songs. Like, I don't know when this one was from, but my favorite one is called Wonderful Canada. Wonderful Canada. And it's just all about, like, their experience of being in Canada and stuff like that. So there's, like, just a ton of variety of the music. But for me, I think one thing that was kind of important for me in the music is that ever since I moved to Portland, I started singing at obon and, like, doing this live band thing, which was something that was not part of my obon experience growing up. As a kid, it was always the recordings that sounded like they were off these terrible LPs that were just really, really scratched up. And but I started over time in the 90s, we started seeing more live singing. And I remember being just, like, kind of jealous and being like, oh man, I wish I spoke enough Japanese to sing those things. And because I'm a singer and that's kind of fun and that would be cool. And then it was and I thought that, and I thought, oh no, I can't sing, right? I just can't, because I don't speak Japanese, right? And I have that imposter syndrome that, like, I'm not allowed to speak Japanese because I'm American, right? And then it was actually Nobuko Miyamoto, who I spoke to a few years ago, and she was like, well, just sing. She's like, I don't sing, but I sing. I was like, oh. She's like, and you're an actual singer, just do it. She's like, because it's like the dancing, you know, it's not about looking good. It's about doing it. And it's about finding connection. And I was like, oh,
Oh, that's cool encouragement.
Yeah. So, like, even though I'm a singer, I'm still really self-conscious about singing in front of, like, that many people and, like, singing in Japanese, even though when I don't speak Japanese. But I'm really glad to have done it. And just because it's allowed me to not feel like such an imposter that, yeah, I can sing in Japanese and not know what I'm doing. Whatever. I'm doing that with karaoke half the time, right? And that I am now doing something that's also part of my culture, because before there were LPs, what did people do? You only had live music. So I feel like I'm really tapping into a much, much older tradition, which is why I want Sarah to be part of my kakegoe band.
Yeah.
Because that's an old tradition too. And just, like, wanting to bring the fourth generation and fifth generation of Japanese Americans into my band all of you, I'm putting a call out there. You guys got to do the band. Because I feel like we're constantly, as we're talking about identity, how do we reconnect? How do we reconnect? Well, you got to actually do physical things. You got to do things like dancing. You got to speak the words. You got to do the music. So it's been really awesome to see at Oregon Buddhist Temple, like, all these people who hadn't done it before just being like, yeah, let's start a band. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool at OBT because we got a cool minister. He plays the bass. He's our bassist.
Yeah, I saw him play the bass. It's like, dude.
I know, and he's got six-string bass and everything, so he looks, like, super awesome when he comes out. And we're just like, that's right, we got the cool religious guy. Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, there was also a song that had, like, Spanish in it, too.
Yeah, that one is from LA, because that one's trying to, that was a collaboration with Nobuko Miyamoto, and then I forget who else, but some really popular, like, Latinx band down in Los Angeles, and they were like, let's make a song that sounds like Los Angeles.
Hmm.
You know, this Japanese-American version of Los Angeles, and if you know anything about the Nikkei community, you know, in Los Angeles especially, it's so influenced by the Mexican community, especially down there. So when I heard that song, I was just like, yeah, this sounds like LA. It's so much fun.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it, but it was really cool.
Yeah, that one's a cool one.
I am curious about one dance. There's one dance where you stood up on the balls of your feet three times.
That one was a little different because that was an Okinawan dance. So we do Japanese dances and we do Okinawan dances. And for our listeners that don't know, Japanese people consider Japanese and Okinawans, like, we're two separate cultures, even though our government likes to tell us otherwise. But that was us attempting to do an Okinawan dance. I'm not sure if we did it well, though, because that was, like, our first time doing it. But that's why it's so different from the other ones, that the other ones are from, like, you know, the islands of Japan versus that one's from Okinawa.
That dance move was so simple. It's like, this, I can do this dance move.
Yeah, stand in place and then go up on your toes.
It's like, this is a great dance move.
I kept messing up. I found it too hard. I was like, oh, God, we have to count to eight. Ah! Yeah. But that one's fun, too. I like it. Because I haven't done much Okinawan dancing. And I was wondering, though. I'm like, am I totally being, like, appropriative here? Am I being gross? I don't know.
Because of, like, Japan's occupation of Okinawa.
Yeah, Okinawa. And how we're, like, always about claiming Okinawa for Japan. Yeah. I'm just like, I hope Okinawans...
So is Okinawa like China's Taiwan?
Yeah, kind of.
Well, thank you all for being on the show today and inviting me to participate in this Japanese holiday.
Thanks for having us, because you know what? It's like Obon is something that just, like, happens, but I never, like, talk about.
I have never talked about it before, so this was really great. This was awesome.
Oh,
thanks, Chinese lady.
if there is a Chinese Hungry Ghost Festival, y'all are welcome. But I also know around this time of year is, now, apologies for my Chinese, the Qi Shi Festival, which is like Chinese Valentine's Day. It's known as Tanabata in Japan, but it's when two lovers, the one day of the year where cowherd and weaver girl may meet over a bridge of magpies, over the Milky Way, or also the Celestial River. So lots of Asian festivals happening in the summertime. And you have been listening to Pacific Underground. I am Tabitha Teo, and I have been joined by
Sarah Onitska
and Jenny Yokoyama.
You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. And thank you to KBOO for the studio time and space. Bye.
Bye.
We take, we take, we use, we throw away. We take, we take, we use, we throw away. Every grain of rice, every drop of water.
We ran away and we forgot. Running to the future, running from the past, running on empty and it just can't last. Oh, motai nai. Oh, motai nai. Motai nai yo. Motai nai. Motai nai.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Tuesday of each month at 6:30 p.m.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feminist Film Night and Planned Parenthood fundraiser on Friday, August 16th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. This Planned Parenthood fundraiser will screen A Girl Like Her, which tells the hidden history of over a million young women who became pregnant in the 1950s and 60s and were banished to maternity homes to give birth and surrender their babies for adoption. And Jane, an Abortion Service, a documentary of Jane. The Chicago-based women's health group performed nearly 12,000 safe illegal abortions between 1969 and 1973. There will be a conversation after the films between a former Jane, Judith Arcana, and a girl like her, Lonnie Jo Lee. Again, that's the Feminist Film Night.